Welcome back to Uniquely Genetics, a podcast by Sheep Genetics. I'm Chloe Bunter, and today for our sixth episode, we're discussing an aspect of genetics within Australia that is unique, and, in my opinion, one of the driving reasons we've seen such great success in industry with the uptake of new genetics in research and development. This aspect is known as adoption and extension. Now, it's no secret that I love genetics, and if you've followed along with this podcast series so far, I have a sneaking suspicion you do as well. The role of adoption and extension is to share that genetics love throughout industry, to sort of make it accessible for all, genetics for all. There are often terms, adoption and extension, that are thrown around or used when discussing research and industry. But what do they actually mean? What are some examples we've seen, both current and in the past, and how can you get involved with these activities? To take us through these questions and more, I've invited along a very special guest. She has first-hand experience of successful adoption and extension campaigns across both beef and sheep and the entire research pipeline. She's always looking for ways to improve and make genetic evaluations within Australia more accessible to the industry. She is currently the project manager for genetics for Meat and Livestock Australia. I'm talking about, of course, Clara Bradford. Well, thanks so much for joining us for episode 6 today, Clara.
Oh, my pleasure. It's good to be here.
I was wondering if you could please just give us a brief background of your history or your role in the industry over years.
Yeah, so I completed a Bachelor of Animal Science at University in New England, and then after that I started working in the feedlot industry for a little period, and then in 2016 I joined MLA as the Land Plan Development Officer, working in the extension side at Sheep Genetics. I did that for about 2.5 years, and then I moved into the adoption space, looking after commercial sheep and beef adoption for genetics. And then now, more recently, I've moved into the R&D livestock genetics space. So I'm the project manager for livestock genetics at MLA now. So I've had a bit of exposure over the last few years on not only working on ground and delivery of genetics, now linking through all the way to our R&D portfolio.
And we heard in the last episode more about that R&D portfolio with Sarah, and it is that commercial adoption side that we're going to be focusing on today. I was wondering, could you summarise what the commercial adoption space for genetics in Australia does look like?
Yeah, so I think in Australia we're in a really good position. We have quite good adoption of genetic technologies across both beef and sheep. We're roughly sitting around the 60% mark in terms of adoption of use of breeding values for sheep and beef, but there's obviously variation between sectors. So certainly for our merinos and our northern beef producers, we've got a lower adoption in those sectors, and that's certainly where we focus some of our efforts. And that's not from lack of trying or it's just that the challenges in those sectors are different. So but as a whole, we're doing quite well. There's certainly room for improvement always. And we can target those different species or region areas and focus our efforts on the activities that really drive the use of genetics and breeding value tools in those sectors. So just to split that up, if you think about the industry like a triangle, at the top we have our seed stock producers that generate our nucleus, and they're the producers that are really focused on genetic gain and selling of bulls or rams. The next tier down from that would be our multipliers. Generally they have quite large herds and they're multiplied genetics and still share those genetics out, and then we have our standard commercial production systems underneath, which are focused on the sale of livestock for meat consumption essentially. So that gives us the flow of genetics, and if we work really strongly on improving the value of the nucleus, then we can have the flow on effect down through our commercial population. When we're in the adoption space, we're generally focusing on two things. how we improve the quality of the nucleus, so working with our seed stock producers, and then on the flip side, working on the pull through from our commercial producers to make sure that they're utilizing those tools that are available to them and have the information to learn how to do that. If we then split what's adoption versus extension, adoption is more around what is the strategy on how we're going to improve the use and uptake of certain tools. And then what are the metrics around the proportion of people utilizing those tools or activities? So it's really on the strategic end, I suppose. The extension side of it is what are the actual activities or tactics itself that we use to implement or drive or increase adoption? So, for example, adoption is the proportion of people using breeding values and the work we do in the space to help target or improve the use. Yep. And then the extensions is the activities that we actually deliver to change or improve adoption. So things like bred well, fed well, or one-on-one consultations with seed stock producers.
Yeah, it's really good to get some clarity around those four terms we hear a lot, being seed stock, commercial producers, and then adoption extension. You mentioned just before that there are different barriers or challenges when it comes to adoption across the different sectors of industry. What sort of trends have you seen when you've worked in this space, or common themes around adoption extension and breaking down those barriers?
It's certainly changed over time. So historically, a lot of the efforts were focused on the seed stock industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's around helping seed stock producers record information or phenotypes, submitting that information into the genetic evaluation, and then the use of that information back on farm. And so in the first stages, when we were trying to build and develop those genetic evaluations, the real focus was on the seed stock industry, so that we had animals coming in and that they were described by our genetic evaluation systems. And some of the challenges and core barriers around that was the intensity of recording on farm, how to submit data, how to use that data for selection, and then also ensuring things like linkage, contemporary groups, and all of our core genetic principles were being covered. So it took a lot more one-on-one work with seed stock producers. And also there were some very early adopters in that space that have really driven the seed stock industry forward. So it was a joint approach,
mm-hmm.
producers working with industry and industry working with producers to get those genetic evaluations up and running. From there, though, we then sort of saw a shift where we had quite well described seed stock animals, and we also had lots of seed stock producers involved in our genetic evaluation services, but we had commercial producers that weren't necessarily using that information to purchase or select their sires in particular. So more recently, our efforts have focused on commercial producers as a target audience, because I guess not left behind, but needed support to understand the genetic tools and languages. So a lot of our activities of late have been working with the commercial sector, and some of the real core themes or barriers were around how complex the language was, and how difficult some of the information was to interpret. So the focus was breaking down the different components of the genetic evaluation into easy to understand languages and activities, so it's not some big scary black box that people who are unsure of where this information was coming from. Ultimately, to create tangible resources that allow the tool to be easily used to really drive productivity in those commercial enterprises, particularly through their sire selection.
Do you have any examples of highlights or standout programs aimed at doing just that from your time working in the space?
Yeah, I think definitely for me, I had the opportunity to work on a broader marketing campaign style activity, which was something really different we did a couple of years ago. It was really to address that challenge of complex language and tools. And it was pretty evident that we didn't have a whole lot of resources focused at the commercial producer. We have breed societies and ABRI and sheep genetics all really heavily working on good, solid information for our seed stock sector. However, where MLA kind of really fits into this was around supporting our commercial producers. So having come from a science background to then go into the adoption space and work on a marketing campaign was quite a new, unique activity for myself, and I really thoroughly enjoyed some of that work. It was really exciting to try and break down the complex science that we're often working with into really nice, tangible, digestible, small pieces of information that really help producers, understand these tools. And particularly nowadays, when a commercial producer has so much on their mind, they're not solely focused on genetics. They've got a whole heap of other things that they need to do to manage and operate commercial enterprises. And often sire selection is something that they only do once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so having materials and resources that are easy for producers to revisit when they need to make those decisions was also really important. We worked on a whole bunch of activities. We had our Accelerate Genetics campaign. It included a website, case studies, short how-to videos, lots of mm-hmm. written materials. And then we conducted a survey after that to understand how successful that was. We had really high engagement with those activities across all avenues. So social media, print media, all of our online tools. We even had some stubby coolers in the mix, so to help get the message out that there were some new resources available. In a five-year period, it was really good to see the change. There was around a 20 to 30% increase in the use of breeding values across industry over that time period. One of the core barriers around having complex language and tools seemed to be addressed, because then when we reassessed what some of our barriers were, that didn't come up as much as it did previous. So we feel like now we've definitely got some really good tools available, particularly for those that are starting out, but also those producers that are only making those decisions once a year and really need some core resources to remind them of what they're looking at and how to utilise those tools for selection decisions.
The MLA Genetics Hub and the videos that you mentioned are pretty iconic when it comes to learning about genetics nowadays. And you saw such great results with that 20-30% increase and the barrier of complex language not appearing next time you did a survey. When you are reflecting back now on that campaign and the adoption and extension components of that, what do you think led to its success? Well, how was it different to previous things that you'd done?
Yeah, I think one of the beauties about the cross collaboration we had internally within MLA working on this is that we had some really good insights around the mediums that producers use to access information. Our target audience had a varied range of the type of mediums that they use to learn. So what we decided to do was take that information and go, okay, well, how do we get our message across? And it was not a single, silver bullet. It was we needed to use a whole heap of different activities and mediums to really get the message out there and get these new tools out there. So, it wasn't just using social media. We also used print media. It wasn't just using online content. It was using written tools as well. And I think it was the combination of all of those different mediums of getting the resources out there, which led to the success of actually sharing that tools and all of the new resources that we'd built with everyone. And so I think it was we had the opportunity to actually really understand our audience and what they needed to then tailor all of those tools to go out in different forms and in different ways. And I think that really pulled it all together in a really nice package and demonstrated that, everyone learns in quite a different way, and we needed to have resources available for all of those different types and mediums.
It is coming up to sale season, and it is typically one of the few points in the year that our commercial producers are looking at genetics and trying to relearn everything that they may have forgotten in the past 12 months or seeing it for the first time. Do you have any tips, tricks or advice for our Aussie producers wanting to know more about genetics?
Yeah, so I certainly think initially those new resources that we've built are a really good place to start. So if you go to genetics@mla.com, it's our genetics hub website, and essentially there's tools and resources in there for broken down into tropical beef, temperate beef, merino, and terminal maternal sheep. So it's really easy to sort of find the resources that focus on your sector. And within that site, there are case studies of producers who've utilized the tools. There's how-to videos, there's written and print resources, and then there's also links and to sort of farm out to all of the other resources and activities. So for example, if I was a temperate beef producer, there's links through there to ABRI, for example, and all of the breed plan resources that are available. Likewise, if I'm a sheep producer, it'll take me through to some of the sheep genetics resources as well. So it's just a really good place to start that will then farm you out to all of the different resources available. Second to that, the next step, I suppose, is seeking out what are the learning opportunities. So also listed on that website is details around some of the workshops that are available. So, for example, Breadwell, Fedwell, or our Breeding Edge workshops, they're a good place to, I guess, get that next level of information. There's activities outside of MLA. So, for example, reaching out to our genetic service providers that I've mentioned, such as ABRI, Sheep Genetics, also all of our breed societies for beef in particular are all set up to support genetic evaluation services. So there's resources on top of those initial places that MLA have developed. And then there's opportunity for commercial producers to work with and engage with their seed stock supplier and understand their breeding program and work with them to help with sire selection as well. So I guess it's about seeking out all of the different pieces of information, also the learning opportunities that are available through the workshops. One of the key resources I think that's really unique is that we've got a How to Shop for a High Performing Sire little booklet. So this is designed for both beef and there's a sheep version, and that has a 10-step pathway, I guess, in terms of reminding all of the different steps on what to do before a sale, at a sale, and after a sale. So that's a really good resource for anyone really coming in that's new. One of the other avenues that's really valuable for producers to get involved in is producer demonstration sites. So over the course of the years, we've had a number of producer demonstration sites, but some of them are currently running that, you know, look at how to utilize breeding values, how to utilize some of our genomic tools like Flock Profile or even the likes of Heifer Select. So it's another way that producers can, I suppose, take the next step from just having the resources on the table to actually getting hands-on in really understanding how to implement some of our tools and technologies. Yeah. So if there's the opportunity to get involved in producer demonstration sites, I really highly recommend it, because it's a good way to not only learn side by side and along with your peers, but it's also a really hands-on, practical way to, you know, you're in the yards looking at the animals, understanding how that information flows and how that can influence your production system. So it's a good way to really take that next step and join the dots and I guess drive the next stages of understanding how to implement those tools into your business. I think the other thing is not to forget that there's lots of people now that have pretty good understanding of use of tool breeding values, but there's also opportunity for them to utilize the other tools available to them. So there's things like Flock Profile for commercial producers. There's also for seed stock producers tools like MateCell. Yeah. So once you're sort of in the system and you've got a bit more of a handle on things, there's, you know, some really good new tools around that help advance or accelerate your breeding programs or understanding of genetics. So I'd also seek out what some of those tools are. Relying on our genetic evaluation service providers will really help understand some of those. And then there's also opportunity to be involved in research projects. So we have a number of research projects that are working with both producers and researchers. And so keeping an eye out for those opportunities is a really good way to really focus on the genetic side of your business as well.
There is such a wide variety of resources out there, as you mentioned, all the way from those who are just learning what the acronyms all mean, right up into being participants of a research project. If you were to think about Australian genetics in sheep and cattle, there is always something on the go in the pipeline. Can you give us any insight into what we might see become available over the next couple of years to look forward to, or how you're seeing the industry tackle the next big adoption and extension issues?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think currently sitting in the R&D space, it's really evident that a lot of the work is focused on some of our new traits that to come into our breeding objective, and a lot of those new traits are around animal health and welfare, and our sustainability traits. So things like methane, fly strike, foot rot, immune competence. I think in a few years' time, those traits will become core to our breeding objective, alongside all of our current production traits, including, you know, weight traits and carcass traits and eating quality traits and wool traits. So I think moving forward, there'll be lots available, and it'll be important to really hone down on what those breeding objectives are for the producers, because there'll be lots of traits to select from. And the more traits you have in the breeding objective, the slower your genetic progress is. So, but I think it's really exciting that we have the opportunity to make really permanent and cumulative change in some of these core traits, and particularly like methane, where there's a real focus on that from an industry point of view to make change in that area, and genetics is a really core part of that. So that's really quite exciting. We're doing a lot of research in that space, and the really cool part about that is that we have good commercial pipelines to deliver that to industry as well. So as soon as we have the research completed, then we have breeding values flowing through our commercial pipelines directly into the hands of producers. So that's really good and key part of the genetics program, of linking our research all the way through to adoption with producers. And then obviously we'll have activities and new workshops and new resources that flow alongside that. And core to that is also around having our producers working with our research projects as well, which another really exciting part is the application of genomic tools. So we now have really robust genetic evaluations that support genomic technologies. That links into having built really strong reference populations over the years. And so from that, we're now able to work on genomic predictions on commercial animals, improve genomic tools for seed stock producers, and also looking at multi-breed genetic evaluations with underpinned by genomics as well. So in a few years' time, I think there'll definitely be more of those tools on the market, which really provide producers the opportunity to drive areas of their business, such as how the female side of their business is performing, or multiplier herds in that herds or flocks in that triangle are really able to access tools that really hone in on their accuracy of selection. So those tools, there'll be more variety, more of them, and more opportunity for producers to really drive genetic gain. I think one of the other things that's worth mentioning is that the goat industry is really ramping up, particularly for our producers that are in some of our more rangeland type environments. And so there's definitely work going on in the space of genetic evaluations and improving those genetic evaluations in goats. And so there'll be, alongside that, there'll be a research area around improving that, but then there'll also be ramped up adoption around, you know, supporting those producers to uptake those technologies. So it's really exciting times, I think, and I think moving forward we'll really see more and more animals in both sheep, beef and goats described with a breeding value, and I anticipate there'll be a high level of adoption across all of our sectors.
There's so many exciting things to come, so definitely keep your eyes on this space. You said probably one of my favourite phrases in all of genetics, which is permanent and cumulative. And it just does show the power of all these new traits coming in that you can make genetic selection on them through these adoption and extension activities all the way through to the new technologies coming out. I was wondering, could you explain to us what it is about genetics that gets you out of bed in the morning and excited to come and work for the industry? Because it is, I am biased, but it's a pretty special field.
For myself, I originally didn't set out to work in this space. Mm. You know, I was more focused on a nutrition path, and that was where I was heading. And an opportunity came up to work in the genetic space. And at the time, I just thought, you know what, let's give it a go. And I've really developed a passion for genetics over the course of the of my career to date, and I think the part that really gets me out of bed in the morning is that we have the opportunity to work with really passionate and dedicated researchers in this space, all the way through to passionate and dedicated producers that are really trying to drive genetic progress. And when you have the capacity to link all of that together, you can achieve some really amazing things. And over the course of the time I've worked in genetics, I've been involved in the implementation of single step, the rollout of genomic tools, the development of new resources for commercial producers, and it's just a forever changing space. But the community, I would say, is quite small, and so we all are really focused on working towards improving the livestock that ultimately we breed and that go into our commercial production systems. So it's such a great community to be a part of, and every day I look forward to working with all of the people in the supply chain to ultimately drive the productivity of our industry.
Clara, thank you so much for joining us and showing us a little bit more about the adoption extension work that does go into genetics, and really highlighting the fact that genetics is for all of industry. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.